When I arrived here in summer of 2020, just a few weeks after I had some friends who came to visit. As you know, if you live in this neighborhood in August, there's always lots of stuff on the curb, students moving in and moving out. My friends have four children, and one of them discovered something on the curb. It was this cross, which appeared to have been tossed off the balcony of one of the apartments as I presume one of the new students was moving in. We began to search and found the rest of our Lord's body, his limbs also. And I placed that, washed it up a little bit, placed it on the counter in my office, and there it has sat for almost 3 years. It's a reminder to me of why we do what we do and of the work that needs to be done. See, it seems to be the case that Jesus and the faith of our fathers has been kicked to the curb. And I don't say that just to complain, because that does nothing. I say that as an examination of our conscience as a church, as disciples of this Jesus. Why has the faith been abandoned? Probably because of the hypocrisy of some who claim to be Christians. Probably because of the complacency of many who call themselves disciples of Jesus. And therefore, because of these things, our witness to Christ has been ineffective. Practically, looking at statistics, two whole generations in our culture have rejected the Christian faith, of which this cross is the symbol that summarizes all that we believe in. So this cross and this corpus, this body of Jesus, has remained in my office these 3 years. I keep wondering, when will be the time to repair it? When will be the time when Christ's victory over the forces of evil will be felt in our parish, in our neighborhood, in our culture? Today is the darkest of days. Today is the day where the effect of sin is felt, and Jesus carries it all for you and me. And today, though, is not a message that is pessimistic but realistic. The reality is, my friends, that we are at a moment of profound opportunity in the history of our culture in which we live and our church. Alongside those who have cast off the Christian faith are two other groups, both motivated, I believe, by the sincere search for the truth and motivated by the realization of how, despite the apparent wealth of our day and our culture, people are increasingly unhappy, lost, depressed and anxious, angry, trapped in addictions, hopeless. Some of these aware young people have been given the gift of a Christian upbringing. And although they know that their life as a Christian will not be easy, They see that this is the way. The way to purpose, the way to freedom, the way to hope, the way to fulfillment. And their love for Jesus, their love for His church, inspire all of us. And there's a second group. A group that knows that there is something that is wrong. They see reality as it is. But they have had virtually no meaningful exposure to Christianity in their lives growing up. But they are open to its claims. They are attentive to its worldview. And they are carefully examining those who practice this faith. Those who call themselves Christians. What if, my friends, they were to discover Christians who were truly humble, like our Lord? Christians who recognized their faults, confessed them, sought forgiveness and healing, and sought to grow. What if they met Christians who were truly committed to the truth, like our Lord? Christians who are not afraid to profess the truth despite the persecution they might face. What if they discovered Christians who were ordered in their affections, not hating the world or retreating from it, nor embracing it as if the passing things of this world could ultimately satisfy them? Rather, Christians who were ordered in their loves, the love of God first and above all things, wholeheartedly, their love and commitment to family, to their friendships, to their work for the common good, to the poor, to the social order. What if they met Christians that were truly loving? Not with a merely sentimental love that's a disguised selfishness, because we want to feel good about ourselves. No, rather Christians who are loving with that self-giving, self-sacrificing love of Jesus that we look upon today. Christians who are devoted to seeking the good of the other and the common good rather than just their own good. What if they met Christians who were truly joyful? Who, although they experience the same sorrows as others during our earthly pilgrimage, we live with the certainty of the victory of Jesus Christ over sin and death. And we live in the joy of the promise of one day sharing in that victory. We have not had this opportunity for centuries. For the first time in a long time, it seems, the cross is not seen as a sign of God's love that brings comfort, but as something reprehensible and repulsive and repugnant. That's exactly how it was seen in the first century to those who heard about this God who died on the cross. That it was shameful, it was the death of a criminal. The lowest and the worst of all. What a powerful witness our church could give in the midst of the darkness around us. A witness that God is not afraid to enter into that void. To enter into our pain and into our suffering. He has done so. And He has emerged victorious. We all bear so much sorrow with our Lord Jesus, who in His passion said that He was sorrowful even unto death. His sorrow itself killed Him. We're in sorrow for all of those who do not know Him, who do not believe in Him, who do not have the life that He desires to give them, all of those who have turned their back on Him, all of those who have rejected Him. So much sorrow. And yet so much opportunity. Today, we bring all of that sorrow to the cross of Jesus. Lift high the cross. Look to this cross, to the God who loves us this much, and we will be saved. And perhaps our culture too can be saved.